kebutuhan sangat berbeda-beda. Kebutuhan di Papua, kebutuhan di Aceh, kebutuhan sangat berbeda-beda. Mungkin kita menyamakan saling belajar, saling mendengar. Nah, itu sudah suatu-suatu yang sangat bagus. Dari universitas mendengar di luar mendengar yang di jalanan, yang jalanan mendengar, saling mengisi, saya kira suatu strategi yang sangat baik. Praksisnya apa? Sumbangannya apa? Nah, Saudara Sari tentu saja tidak mempelajari lagu-lagu PKK untuk meningkatkan kemampuan mereka menyanyi, kan? Atau mempelajari itu bagaimana agama di napi untuk mengajari mereka sholat lebih baik, kan tidak ya. Nah, dengan sendirinya Anda sudah tahu barangkali ya. Justru untuk mengubah konsep politik yang dipercaya oleh dosen-dosen Anda itu, bahwa politik itu hanya yang struktural, dan mereka menunjukkan apa yang mereka tidak yang hilang kalau mereka melakukan itu, apa yang sama sekali mereka tidak bisa, mereka miss itu sesuatu yang penting kalau menyekat seperti itu. Itu satu yang sangat berat, dan saya sangat simpati pada Anda. Anda perlu mencari super power untuk menemukan itu ya. Super power itu barangkali mencari beasiswa melalui lembaga-lembaga yang besar, supaya tiba-tiba Anda dikirim kemana gitu. Nah, baru dosen-dosen Anda nanti mungkin tahu gitu ya. Biasanya karena mereka masih agak takut juga barangkali ke super power. Nggak tahu saya politiknya bagaimana di sana, strateginya. Saudara Siswono, saya setuju. Istilah primitif itu sama sekali harus kita pertanyakan gitu. Dari segi apa kita pakai kata primitif? Siapa yang berhak menjuluki orang lain primitif dari yang lain ya? Ini justru konstruksi-konstruksi semacam ini yang harus kita bongkar. Tidak kita pakai dengan mentah-mentah. Walaupun kita sering terperosok lah, karena sudah terbiasa dengan konsep-konsep itu. Oleh sebab itu perlu kritis. Dan apakah universal sifatnya semua itu? Karena kok semua permainan bisa sama. Barangkali ada hal yang universal, buktinya kita semua bernapas dan kita makan dan minum ya. Tetapi di saat yang lain sangat berbahaya untuk menyamakan semua itu sebagai universal. Ini sama dengan modernis itu, nanti semua sama. Oh, kecantikan itu sama semua, bisa diukur dari ini standar saya, karena semua sama gitu. Nah, itu yang harus kita sikapi dengan mengatakan bahwa ada perbedaan dari segi lokal yang sangat bahwa cantik dari segi satu hal berbeda dengan cantikan yang segi yang lain gitu, dari segi lokalnya. Itu saya kira harus perlu justru yang pemaknaan lokalnya harus kita bangkitkan. Saya pikir semua yang mengenai apa semua sudah saya kira semua. Nah, kalau yang tidak nanti dibicarakan di luar, saya kira. Terima kasih banyak.
Ya, terima kasih. Saya rasa sudah cukup waktu kita untuk mengakhiri pertemuan kali ini. Catatan saya mungkin hanya beberapa poin ini. Jadi rupanya Anda sekalian dan kita yang berada di sini itu memang berada di dalam tatanan masyarakat yang sudah dilakukan oleh otoritas pengetahuan, sehingga menimbulkan perasaan terhimpit yang bentuknya bermacam-macam seperti yang sudah diungkapkan oleh rekan-rekan sekalian tadi. Nah, dalam konstelasi perasaan yang semacam itu, rupanya kalau status bisa menjadi bahan inspirasi sebagai istilah dari penilaian tadi, alat bicara untuk mengungkapkan perasaan terhimpit secara kolektif itu tadi, dengan catatan tidak akan ini sebagai gerakan nanti menjadi bentuk-bentuk badan politik yang baru lagi seperti partai umpamanya, dan juga bukan untuk menjadi rezim pengetahuan yang baru lagi. Jadi dengan beberapa catatan itu, di hari pertama ini kita bisa mengingat kembali bahwa besok pada hari yang kedua masih berupa sifatnya lecture seperti ini, kelas, dan pembicara dari Taiwan akan lebih memperlebar lagi ruang kontekstualisasi cultural status itu untuk perbincangan di Asia. Jadi saya rasa saudara-saudara bisa nanti entah menyiapkan atau memperlebar lagi teman-teman yang bisa kita bicarakan. Mumpung ini peristiwa yang belum terjadi, kita bisa kumpul dan membicarakan hal yang di luar kotak-kotak ilmu pengetahuan yang sudah baku. Saya rasa ini satu poin yang sangat penting, karena peristiwa semacam hari ini kita berkumpul itu jarang terjadi. Jadi dengan itu saya mengakhiri acara pada hari ini, dan kepada para pembicara, mari kita berikan kepada mereka aplaus. Saya kembalikan waktu kepada penyelenggara. Silakan.
Mitra buat kita semua. Selamat datang kembali di hari kedua public lecture dan workshop Asian Studying Asia, yang mungkin bisa disebutkan bahwa inilah atau hari ini adalah inti dari semua diskusi kita tentang apa sih yang menjadi poin penting dari Asia, Asian Study Asia gitu, Asian Study Asia. Hari pertama teman-teman semua sudah mendapatkan public lecture yang lain dari Ibu Melani Budianta dan teman-teman dari Kunci yang menggambarkan secara historis lah perkembangan apa sih kajian cultural studies itu, atau apa sih cultural studies itu, bagaimana perkembangannya dan bagaimana juga konteksnya dengan Indonesia. Bagaimana di Indonesia atau di negeri kita perkembangan yang terakhir, yang update, yang sudah secara detail dipaparkan oleh paper teman-teman dari Kunci. Nah, hari kedua kita kali ini akan lebih memfokuskan pada persoalan atau pada isu yang benar-benar lebih fokus, yaitu Asian Study Asia ini, yang saya kira Anda sudah semua punya papernya dan sudah mungkin agak pusing membacanya karena 14 halaman, satu spasi berbahasa Inggris. Kalau sampai selesai di ujung, hebat sekali, karena ada teman-teman yang dua halaman aja udah menyerah gitu karena saking pusingnya. Tapi lebih lepas dari kepusingan itu, ini semua menarik. Bersama-sama kita sudah ada tamu yang datang dari jauh sekali. Tiket pesawatnya aja saya nggak tahu berapa.
How much do you pay for the SS?
Pokoknya mahal. Jauh sekali bersama-sama kita pagi ini akan mendiskusikan persoalan saya sebutkan tadi, dan Profesor Wan Sing Chen PhD, saya selalu salah mengatakannya, adalah eksekutif editor di Inter-Asia Cultural Studies, juga pengajar di National Tsinghua University di Taiwan, makanya saya bilang jauh. Dan pagi ini kita akan diskusi yang menyambung hari pertama tentang tema public lecture kita kali ini. Dan Pak Kwan Sing ini, kita harus menyepakati beberapa persoalan. Yang pertama soal bahasa. Pak Kwan Sing berbahasa Inggris dan tentu saja Mandarin, sementara kita semua di sini berbahasa Indonesia. Saya kira mungkin kita sepakati aja, Pak Kwan Sing akan mempresentasikan dengan bahasa Inggris. Nanti saya akan membantu juga teman-teman untuk memberikan poin-poin besar dari pemaparan Pak Kwan Sing. Tapi kalau kemudian setelah itu kita beranjak pada tanya jawab, kalau Anda lebih suka berbahasa Inggris, berbahasa Inggrislah, tidak ada masalah dengan itu semua. Tapi yang lebih suka berbahasa Indonesia karena asal alasan nasionalisme misalnya, silakan juga berbahasa Indonesia atau bahasa, ya, jangan bahasa Jawa lah, karena saya tidak terlalu paham. Jadi prinsipnya forum kita santai, apapun yang bisa Anda membuat Anda santai, silakan dilakukan. Jadi nanti Pak Kwan Sing akan memakan waktu kurang lebih 1,5 jam untuk beliau memaparkan dan bercerita panjang lebar, mulai dari konteks yang lebih besar tentang apa sih Asian Study Asia itu, sampai pada paper atau isi dari paper yang sudah beliau buat ini gitu. 1,5 jam, saya berharap Anda bisa tahan. Setelah itu kita akan break 10 menit untuk minum kopi atau minum atau apa, dan setelah itu baru kita akan masuk ke forum question and answer session atau sesi tanya jawab. Nanti Pak Kwan Sing, untuk memastikan tidak ada satupun poin yang luput dari pembicaraan kita di forum ini, Pak Kwan Sing akan dibantu oleh teman kita Nino dari Kunci. Sekali lagi untuk memastikan bahwa karena kendala bahasa ini, tiap dari kita yang berdiskusi punya keterlibatan yang mendalam di sana gitu. Sekali lagi, forum kita santai, jangan merasa terhambat dengan persoalan bahasa, karena itu bukan yang penting. Gitu. Oke, Pak Kwan Sing akan panjang lebar dan berbicara dengan sangat pelan, mudah-mudahan semua bisa paham. Dan sekali lagi, saya tidak berencana meng-underestimate teman-teman yang soal bahasa ini, tapi memastikan bahwa poin-poin besar sudah tercover selama beliau mempresentasikan papernya. Oke, sebelumnya mudah-mudahan 1,5 jam ke depan, ini 10:30, sampai jam 11 kita akan benar-benar mendengarkan yang disebut dengan lecturing, dan berharap Anda tidak semua tidak akan mengantuk semua panjang lebar. Silakan, please, the forum is yours.
Thank you for the introduction. I'm sorry I can't speak in Indonesian, but at the same time, English is not my first language. For no other means to communicate. But let me begin by thanking Kunci for inviting me, especially Nurini, for the detailed arrangement within communicating through email. And also, of course, I have to acknowledge Japan Foundation for backing things up. Japan Foundation, especially Asia Center, I have strange relation with. They have been quite supportive for different kinds of, you know, linking within Asia contacts. Though I'm personally located in Taiwan, and Taiwan actually cannot be part of the funding application and so on. But somehow I find I'm flowing around through Asia Center. So I'm grateful to that. this is actually my first time in Indonesia. Quite unfortunately, until now it's the first time. So I'm really hoping to learn more about what is going on here. And when I say I'm trying to learn, I really mean it, because that's part of my experience. Wherever you go in Asia, especially the new places you've never been, it's really enable a different kind of understanding, not only about, you know, society like Indonesia, but somehow once you put into perspective and actually understand my own society better. I'll try to elaborate later. So what I'm going to do in this forum is actually to set up several contexts within which this paper was written or still being written. And in some way, the first part, I'm going to break the rule to tell some personal story, right? Or seemingly personal story, but actually, when you hear the story, you will know it's not quite personal, you know, or identity or positions and so on, all highly structured, right? In a certain way. I don't mean determined, right? So I'm going to move into, you know, that story in order to tell you several things, right? How I came into, you know, in touch or something with this funny thing called cultural studies, and how cultural study has been spread around, at least in the Asia context I'm more familiar with. And the second part, well, let me backtrack. These content might be able to be in dialogue with certain questions raised yesterday. For instance, why Asia? What's so important about it? So in some way, it's not only for the paper, but also in response to question has been raised yesterday. It might have sort of temporal answer to that. So the second part, I'm going to address the question, let me name it this way, the international or global structure of knowledge production or knowledge flow. So I'm going to map out a little bit in order to tell the story why not only intellectual knowledge production, but also intellectual community are highly structured in that sense once you put into the, you know, into this map. And the third part, in relation to that, you know, I'm trying to argue Asia is not simply a geographical notion, but as more importantly, as a method for us to do something else, or to shift, to change ourselves. So that will lead to the paper itself. Some of you might have already read it, so I'm not going to go into detail. But we'll give kind of the key point, what I learned from this process engaging in the Asian context. All right? I was born in 1957. Which was the earlier moment of how should I say, after the war, right, and so on. And retrospectively, Taiwan as a political entity has been characterized by following terms. But you can read into, you might find a certain resonance there, right, by these terms. Even until now, but the way and emphasis might be shifting. So from the 50s onward, by these key terms. Developmentalism, familiar, right? Authoritarianism, statism, and more importantly, anti-communism, right? You know what I mean? And essentially means pro-US. Huh? And these characteristics of the socio-political space did not come into being out of the blue. But once you move around, you find actually other places, like for instance South Korea, to less extent to Japan, share very, very similar kinds of history and so on, but also the characteristics. So in my view, it's these characteristics have been the result of three locking terms or forces. Right? The more simple one is usually people use the shorthand term capitalism, right? Of capital forces. Also, the second term is connecting to that is the history of colonialism, right? Everywhere in Asia, at least. And a third term, which is connecting to all these, is what I try to use the term Cold War structure. It will become clear what does that mean. Right? So within that context, a lot of things happen. You know, probably you find similar things here. Certain books are banned, have been banned, and certain thoughts cannot be introduced or anything like that. So even within the Taiwan space, when I grew up, when I grew up, there was no sense, at least with the student community, we didn't know what is right, what is left. There's no such distinction because it was basically a right-wing space, right, defined by these terms. So these things begin to shift, of course, later on. But it's within that context I grew up and have not much critical thought or cultivated by these nationalist education and so on. Right? One of the radical changing moments for me personally was in 1981. I went to US to study after 2 year military service. Around that time, even when I, trace back, when we say going abroad to study, it meant US, nowhere else. It has become a routine, right? Structured routine. When you say foreigner, you mean American, right? And it's a funny situation. I thought Taiwan was unique, but actually no. When you compare the notes with South Korean and so on, over 90%, if not 95%, people receive higher education were in the US. And that began to change in the 1990s. Right? And that has something to do with the Cold War structure. If you want to draw the kind of regional map, and this will be what? China, Taiwan, South Korea, Japan, right? And all the way down to Southeast Asia and South Asia region and so on, right? And there is a dividing line. And this will be North Korea, and so on, right? And this part will be locked into so-called, at that time we understand as the camp of democracy, right? That's how we understood. But actually it was a capitalist camp versus a socialist or communist camp, right? So whenever, but what's inside the region, unseen on the map, is actually the US, right? In that context. So there was nowhere you can go. You can only go there, right? That's the only place that might take you in. According to my experience, certain places they wouldn't let you in because these are kind of indoctrinated with right-wing ideology. But the US has that policy to either promote or something, right? And that's where the structure come in, right? Which is different from the earlier kind of colonial movement. And I entered the graduate program in the School of Journalism and Mass Communication in University of Iowa. And it was a very funny program because the school was known for, and around that time, in early 1980, for anti-behavioral research, right? Whatever that means. So throughout, I went there in 1991 and finished 1998, MA and PhD. Throughout the program, there's only one, how should I say, required courses, right? Everyone has to take in the beginning. Then what happened was in that course, the teachers actually destroyed the field, almost saying this is not worth doing, that field. So they would take you, they would say, go anywhere you want, right? Outside the department, right? So I went to, say, philosophy, sociology, history, English, and so on, right? These departments to get something. So from the very, very beginning, we were trained or structured that way. You don't have any sense of discipline. Right? There's no divide, no sense of divide. So there is no investment in disciplinary boundary or disciplinary field. And several things happened around that time. I still remember, I actually learned more from my graduate student community, especially from the senior grad PhD students. And these were all, that moment, it was a kind of, how should I say, Marxist influence, right? Everyone was influenced by that. But it was, in some way, very, very traumatic experience to me. Why? Because you suddenly, once you learn these things, you suddenly say, shit, what I learned before at home was completely wrong or something, or completely one-sided. So that part of the system of knowledge you have in some way collapsed. Right? You have to start from anew. So that was that kind of shaping moment in some way, but not only by Marxism. Around that time, in the, I think from either late 80 or early 80, in the US, there was a whole wave of intellectual, well, academic, let me put it that way, academic trends of movement across all the campuses, right? Under this wider sense of the term critical theory, right? And you're probably going through here, these terms like structuralism, semiotics, hermeneutics, or later postmodernism, feminism, and so on, right? Or neo-Marxism, all these terms. So there was that trend, right? Penetrating different fields. So wherever you go, you study these things. So I still remember I went to English department. It's supposed to be doing literature. So I was taking this course in hermeneutics, the kind of the theoretical historical chases. And ended up, you know nothing about literature. They don't teach you anything about literary text, right? I'm giving you this example in order to show you that was a trend within which we're structured, right? Just like that, right? Within that kind of momentum, you somehow just there. You will not even know until later that was a movement there. That was the first moment. Then from the mid-1980s, when I was almost finishing up, beginning my PhD program, a new trend, so-called new trend, evolved, which was cultural studies. So it also penetrated in different fields, but in the beginning, less so with a literary study, later taken up by literary study, but penetrating through, say, communication studies and so on. Right. So that was my initial encounter with the thing called cultural studies. So ended up, I still remember in my dissertation, because the theory weighed, so I wrote my entire dissertation in theory, or rethinking postmodern theory. And these names evoked yesterday, right? That was mid-1980s. Baudrillard, Foucault, Deleuze and Guattari, and so on, right? These were the four major authors mediating through my work. Then ended up in the concluding chapter in dialogue with cultural study, especially so-called the Birmingham tradition, and so on, right? So that was the... around that time, it was still possible to do purely theoretical dissertation. And I'm ambivalent about it at this point. But you can't say I regret I did that, right? But because some people, some friends, say from Korea, they have much more strong sense around that time because the student movement and so on happened there, right? So they were all studying their own society, right? Except us. Doing postmodern theory was trying to sort out. Not for me, it wasn't from the very, very beginning, was not something universal, right? It's about the West, about specifically US society. How does that society work? And so on. I said I felt ambivalent because once I went home, it takes a long time to go home intellectually, right? Because your research wasn't involved your home. So you need more time and trying to find other way to come home. Right? So, but in some ways that training in theory also later I found become a method for me to formulate things, to organize things around, right? Or in a methodological way, then you find out what's wrong with essentialism. So you do your analysis, you will confront that and so on, right? And so that was, I finished around 1988, then taught a year or so in New York, in the City University, which became a problem because you study critical theory or cultural study, one of the spirit tells you, right? You learn these things in order to do what? In order to change your society, to be involved, to be able to intervene, right? But then I found myself in New York, and no place to intervene except in the university, right? And there's no community, and they would label you as something called Asian American, which I couldn't identify, right? I wasn't that. Right? So part of that, then, you know, it was a difficult experience. Then change, you know, opportunity came up in 1999, I think. In my university, Tsinghua University in Hsinchu, which is the computer town called Science Park, was a science and engineering based elite university. They call themselves, or they pride themselves as a MIT in Asia. So they opened up a new program called the graduate program called Institute of Literature. It was intended in some way as an interdisciplinary program. So some of my colleagues there were trained in Paris, right? One person under Julia Kristeva and doing semiotics, the other doing film theory under Christian Metz and so on, right? So I saw this a good opportunity to do something different, so I went back there. Then the story came. It was the late 1980s, was the most turmoil moment in Taiwan, right? With the so-called democratic transition or democratic movement, especially with the in conjunction with social movement. When you think back, yesterday we were talking something, just give you one image. For 1 year, there's people counting, there are 2,500 or 600 street demonstrations for 1 year, 2,000 something. So on all the issues, on every front, right? So that's the radical shifting moment. So that's the moment enable us to intervene, right? I mean, to participate, let me put it that way, rather than intervene. In the beginning, I still remember the first couple years, we didn't spend too much time at school teaching, but actually on the street, or behind the scenes trying to get things organized, right? Become an organizing, that's where I learned how to organize things around in some way, but also trying to, in order to be able to organize and do these things, you begin to come home. You're trying to see how the society works, and so on. That's one level. Another level is, because of the shifting, everything opened up. In 1987, the martial law was lifted. Martial law was a little bit, how should I say, equivalent to internal security law or something, right? So everything is changing. And one important change is with the media side. Used to be media would not, how should I say, they don't issue new license, so you cannot publish. Around that time, it's opened up, right? Become a market mechanism. And then we have, actually you have a long tradition in the Chinese speaking context. Literary supplements, every day, any newspaper have one page, and used to be on literary work. And later, in the, it has been there for maybe 100 years, right? Like poetry or novels and so on. Then in the, I think mid-80s, become a kind of literary criticism places, right? But during that transition, because the market opened up, the press is also, how should I say, competing against each other for new ideas or new issues, right? So generated around that moment, it's not an isolated instance I'm trying to draw the picture. Around that moment, one of the things emerged. It's like a movement, right? Cultural criticism or cultural critique. So on those pages, you pick up this contemporary current issue or in deep contradiction, some issues, right? And write about these things. And it's highly political. In some way, if you read the newspaper, it's in competition with these political columns, right? Certain issues emerge, and you try to criticize something there. And all the newspapers competing for these essays and so on. And the editor is actually quite radical in some way. They will give space, a whole page or a page every week for some undergraduate student, right? They write about how, say, well, I still remember I was teaching in the undergraduate program. One team did a research on how the name of the street in Taipei was formed, right? They found out the logic. One of the logic of the street name was actually the map from China, right? Put onto the Taipei city, right? So you have Fuzhou in the southern part of the city, and Shenyang in the northeast part of the city, and so on and so forth. That's one layer. Another layer is all these nationalist indoctrination, like fraternity or peace or something. We have a doctrine. That's the, how should I say, the latitudinal level of naming and so on. So these things were published in there. That's one of the elements, but much more kind of contemporary in the sense of dealing with emerging issues. That was the context with this movement. And I remember in early 1990, then we formed a very sleek journal, highly packaged journal, called it means the marginal site of the island or something, right? Isle margin. It was composed of a group of cultural critics, right? And these people are not academics, are not just academics. There were friends, you know, doing psychiatry, doing dentistry, right? Or editor, graduate student, reporter, and so on. Basically cultural worker and academics like me, right? And the reason to have this space was the assumption that eventually, as I try to describe, this cultural criticism in the newspaper would disappear once the political transition is finished, the distribution of power is finished. It's probably like anywhere else. Once it's finished, it's stabilized, right? And each newspaper will identify with certain political line. So they are really afraid of these funny things, right, called cultural criticism. And when I think back, it's probably too early. We did it around 1991. And became some sort of alternative media, like Kunz's newsletter, but much more elaborate. We published like 4 volumes a year, right, as a journal. So that was one of the moments. But these groupings are connecting to the social movement sector directly. So we have activists on board and also writing and so on. So when certain political issues emerge, or labor issues emerge, these things will be organized. That's part of the, how should I say, the journal mechanism is trying to do in the, I'll try to elaborate, in the Asia context, which is different from, at least how I know, with the American context, right, which is different. I'll tell the story later. And as I said, these things are interlocking, right? Within the same conjuncture, these things emerge. Cultural criticism became later kind of the forerunner, early, how should I say, I don't have the term, later became some sort of a cultural study. Why? I think the cultural, well, at least in the Taiwan instance, cultural study did not emerge until mid-1990 as an academic practice, right? And part of it is that it's the shrinking of social political space. As I said earlier, you know, you spend time on the street or organizing this and that, but after around mid-1990, the political change in terms of power pretty much finished, right? So the space is shrinking. So some of us get pushed back to university, right, to work. And around 1998, let me add one point. This entire literary supplement, right, was in the tradition, if you wish, literati, the Chinese literati tradition. So that tradition of writing, different form of writing or critique, has been there at least for one century. Right. So in some way, without that tradition, this form will not emerge. So if you trace that, right, so that's one side of the story. The point I'm trying to make at this point is, cultural study as an academic practice, if you trace that, trace this root, it's not, one root is this long-term root with the literati culture. The second root is in dialogue and in relation to social political movement, right, in the 80s. And then the third moment I would describe is this international flow, or what have you, the term globalization, or globalizing the term of a cultural study, especially the influential Birmingham school, right? It provides certain frame of analysis, but in relation to these things. So at least you can trace all these things, right, in the Taiwan context. How was cultural study formed? In 1998, a cultural study association was formed. Right? And it was, or it has been, a defensive mechanism in the sense that people within the academia doing alternative work has no home, right? So some people use the funny term, they say, these are, how should I say, they use a strong term, self-respected garbage or marginal, right? These people respect themselves, but they, within their own field, they're marginalized, right? So once you get together, we counted it, it has at least 20-some different disciplines, including economics and even health, public health, and trying to think in different ways and trying to approach our own society in different terms, but find no umbrella. So that became an umbrella to come together as a self-defense mechanism. By now, it's the most active association, which is an NGO, right? It's a registered NGO, right? Doing forums and so on every month or every other week, has its own website and so on. But without these earlier moments for preparation, these things cannot, this association or this field, little field, cannot come into being. Right? So the point is to make is some people always trying to say cultural study is something from the outside. Right? Or they tell you it's at the Birmingham and everywhere, learn from that. But from this story, at least you will be able to see it's not that simple story. Right? So in some ways, already grounded in the local context, local history and cultural history. Right? So in that sense, to answer some of the question, it will not be like the postmodern, at least how I see it, or the postmodern moment in Indonesia in 1994, what I heard yesterday. It has, because it has, it's long roots there already, but hit into this term called cultural study will be taken up. Right? So in that sense, I heard there was this institute called cultural study established in 1974, around here. So it was before even the term cultural study was popularized, right? But in a different way. So what I'm trying to suggest that cultural study, actually when you move around, this story is not unique at all, not at all. Right. It's unique only in the sense in relation to the U.S. practice of a cultural study. In my view, it's completely locked on campus, become academic practices. Right. And part of that is U.S. university system is big enough and establish its own mechanism, right? Not only teaching textbook, but also star system within the publishing industry and so on. But everywhere else, it's not like that. But everywhere else, it's trying to imagine they can be like that, right? Which is there's no condition and no possibility to do such thing. So it was within such context. When I move around in Asia, the same story was said in Korea. What I mean is the democratic movement, right? The cultural criticism wave, then kind of a cultural study emerged. So when you move around, you find out even we need the sign of a cultural study in order to do something. But if you say simply say it's in, you know, imported from Birmingham, you're not able to explain why it's able to emerge and why it's able to last, right? And cultural studies, not like other disciplines, sociology or anthropology and so on, right? Which, in the beginning, it was the sort of a colonial importation anyway, right? And this emergence is in conjunction with the reality that the complexity of our own society, we're not able to understand and analyze these situations properly. So in that sense, to put it shortly, I think cultural study in different places is not simply academic, but essentially, and more importantly, is an intellectual project, an intellectual practice. So I make the distinction between academic and intellectual. Academic in the sense that it's locked within university institutions, right? Whereas intellectual is deeply connected and involved in the social space, not as an isolated instance, right? Now let me move on to the second connected part I'm trying to map out. Within that sense, within that space, so-called the global knowledge production. If we can make a very, very simple map or simple historical map, right, for the past century or two, the knowledge production, not only knowledge production, is structured like this. And what have you? Latin America, Africa,